Well, it's the 1st of February, February 3rd, year 2002. Yesterday, the mathematicians of the country got carried away. They forgot all politics and everything else because it was very interesting. Even in military time, 2200, it was 2002, 2200. Only to say that we live in a great country where we hear these kind of things. And this morning we're going to certainly talk with our roundtable panelists about the twos and what February really means when it comes to the issues. We have some interesting issues this morning, and we have with us to discuss these issues our first Sunday morning roundtable panel. Paul Carlson will be joining us for the first time. He's Democrat, Maryland House of Delegate. Delegate Carlson, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Right. He's representing our dear Dana Jones, who's out of town this morning, but he'll be sitting in. Now, let's go to the other guys who are regulars here, and they like to put their two cents in, which we love. Nick Sawak, who is the state chair of the Maryland Libertarian Party.
Morning, Jerry.
And also from the Maryland GOP, state chair Michael Steele. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Fine. Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you very much for joining us here on Metro Talk. In getting started, I don't know, it was a toss-up in producing this morning, because we wanted to start off by giving your assessment of the State of the Union address by President George Bush this past week. But last night, the Prince George's County School Board fired Iris Metz. And this has really caused havoc, not only in the educational circles, but in the political circles of Maryland, because now the state legislature is thinking about getting in this whole thing, making demands that the school board should be curbed of its powers, and then Metz is going to appeal to the state school. This is another American dilemma in public education. What do you think about it?
Well, as a Prince Georgian, I can tell you right off the bat, it's embarrassing, and it's if anyone should have been fired, it should have been the school board. Our school board has been the most incompetent group of individuals for the last 10 years or so, and it's phenomenally amazing to me that the citizens of this county have not awakened to the reality that they need to put on that school board representation that represents the people to get into the type of fighting matches that they have with the superintendent whom they hired, who is nationally renowned. I mean, this isn't a woman who's been, sitting in a room sort of thinking of educational ideas. This is a woman who has programs from her last job that are still being implemented and still being carried on. And our county school board, to me, is just an embarrassment.
Yeah, Jerry, I couldn't agree with Michael more. It is a real problem. Here you have a superintendent that is doing all the right things from a policy perspective. She has made the tough decisions to implement full-day kindergarten, which we know has huge positive results for the kids. And you've got a board of education that's been constantly undermining her. And the big loser here is going to be the kids in Prince George's County, because for that school board to find a competent, capable superintendent is going to be a very difficult job.
Well, who will want to come to work
here?
Who's
going to come here?
That's right.
Well, I think that some of the solutions that have been put forth to fix the problem can be worse than the problem itself. About coming in from a state level and managing Prince George's schools from Annapolis, and that's just wrong. The school board was elected by the people of Prince George's County, and it represents the people of Prince George's County, and if the school board isn't doing their job, they need to take the school board out. But to try and take away the power from the school board because the school board doesn't get along with the superintendent they hired is not a good idea. If the superintendent is doing the wrong job, the school board has a responsibility to the people to change what the superintendent's doing. And I don't care how good a superintendent you are, if you can't deal well with your boss, you can't work there.
Well, I agree with that. I mean, don't get my earlier comment wrong that I'm somehow calling for state action. The further away from Prince George's County Annapolis can be, the happier I am, given what often comes out of Annapolis for Prince George's County, which is very little. But in this instance, I think it's a matter of the school board recognizing that it's inept and incapable of managing the school system. They have a professional woman who knows what she's doing. Now, you can have policy disagreements, but if you've watched what's happened over the last 4 or 5 years with this school board and its superintendents, it's beyond policy. It's all personality. It's all personal. You know, which side of the room she's sitting in and who's, you know, who walks in the door first. This sort of amateurish high school behavior has to stop if this school system is going to turn itself around and the people of this county are going to get the type of quality education that they deserve.
And you know what, you know what has to happen for that to happen is the people of Prince George's County need to go to their school board.
Absolutely.
Because the truth is, you go all the way up the chain, yeah, and you have the citizen.
Absolutely.
Paul, I want to ask you a question. Glenn Denning, Paris Glenn Denning, the governor, has been such an educational governor in Maryland. I mean, that's what...
he's taught us some stuff.
Excuse me if I laugh at that.
Some say that's his legacy.
The fact is, I'm
beginning to wonder if this sense now that the Iris Metz attorneys are going to the state school superintendent, Mrs. Nancy Gresmick.
Yeah.
Do you think Glenn Denning is going to get into this? Because Glenn Denning is from Prince George's County. And, he's...
Well, I don't think so. And before actually we jump onto that, it's one thing to comment that the Board of Education is clearly doing a poor job here, and to say that Prince Georgians need to do something about it. The fact of the matter is we have what I would call a crisis situation in Prince George's County, and to sit back and say, well, something has to be done in the future, and for the state not to play a role in that, I feel would be somewhat irresponsible. So I'm not sure exactly what that solution is, and it may involve restructuring the board and having some appointed members. And I haven't taken a firm position on that. But I don't think it's appropriate, and I don't think the governor will get involved in that issue at this time. There's a process there. However, I think at the end of the day, if the board fires the superintendent,
well, they've already done that.
Yeah, then I think that it's going to be tough to make a case to keep her on. I think that's not going to work in the long run.
Well, I can tell you the governor will be about as involved as he always has been in education in Prince George's County. When he was county executive for 12 years, he built two schools. And then once he becomes governor, the county executive, the county school board, the superintendent are fighting toe-to-toe with him every time to get a dollar out of him towards education in the county. So don't do us any favors, Mr. Governor. Keep the level of interest you always had, and we'll work this thing out.
Our telephone number 301-80, pound 980, on the Verizon Wireless System. And while we might have gone on to another topic on our agenda, you can certainly call up and discuss any of the topics we have talked about thus far. We're talking with Paul Carlson, along with Nick Sawick, as well as Michael Steele here with Metro Talk's First Sunday Roundtable Debate. All right. More good marks for the way President Bush is doing his job. Newsweek poll following his State of the Union address finds 83% of respondents approved. What about that 83%? Is it good or bad? Did the president give a good speech or what?
I think no question the president did a very nice job in his speech. I think for the most part how he's handled this war on terrorism has been good. I would say that he goes a little bit too far in talking too tough, and by lumping the axis of powers together, I think that's going to create a problem for our coalition partners. Lumping those three countries together, they're each have their own issues, but they should be dealt with on an individual basis, and I think that's been his policy to date.
Well, the biggest objection there, Paul, the fact that Iran was lumped with the other two countries, or, as you say, that should have been singled out as to Iran's response.
Well, I think when you get into labeling, three different situations all in the same with very tough rhetoric, that it becomes a problem with the coalition that he, in fact, has done a nice job at building, and I think he gets a little bit over the top in the John Wayne talk. I would rather see us, you know, speak softly but carry a big stick. I mean,
thank God for John Wayne, for goodness sakes. I mean, you know, this is a president who's actually called a spade a spade. I mean, we're dealing with a terrorist network. These three countries over the last 20 years have played an intimate role, and to finally put them all in the same box and say, hey, you know, this is the enemy. I mean, if you go back, Ronald Reagan, in an off-air remark, referred to the Soviet Union as the evil empire, and it stuck. I mean, and this is one of those situations where the president, on air, in the face of America, and to the face of those three countries, said, you are part of the problem. You harbor these terrorists. You promote their terrorist networks. And we're going to come after it. We know who you are. We're going to come after you. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. At this point in time. Now, what's going to happen, what's going to be important, is the follow-up. What steps are going to be taken by this administration and our coalition partners in dealing with it?
See, the tough talk helps, I suppose, calling people the axis of evil, using loaded words like axis, if you're trying to pick a fight. And it looks like our president's trying to pick a fight. Now, I'm a little bit against trying to pick a fight with three countries that have not done anything actively to do anything to us at all. I mean, we've come out of Afghanistan, we kicked some butt there. Taliban's gone, got a new government there, got Al-Qaeda running. So I think we're starting to fall in this trap of feeling a little good and going and running after the very next person we can pick a fight with. Now, the truth is, North Korea has warmed up to the West. Great, huge strides during the Clinton administration. We were having talks. They were talking about opening the border. They were letting people go back and forth.
Yeah, but that doesn't change the reality.
Iran has democratic government in place. It's not the best democratic government, and it's still under the sway of the clerics.
Look, folks.
And Iraq hasn't done anything.
Iraq hasn't done anything. A little reality check, people. Just because I'm talking nice to you doesn't mean I'm going to go, you know, bomb your house in the evening, or that I'm going to have surrogates do my dirty work. I can sit down in this room with you and have folks out there, you know, hot wiring your car.
And
it doesn't matter. I mean, don't you know, the process of diplomacy is one thing. The reality of dealing with terrorism is something very different. And this president is looking at two fronts. The president's not saying, I'm not going to talk to these folks. He's just calling them out for what we know they've been doing.
But just because you have a gun doesn't mean you're going to come shoot me.
No.
As a Republican, you should know
that. Just because I have a gun, you should be aware that I could.
I am aware.
Okay.
Now that we've settled the problems of gun control, I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Get a piece of the action here as we get into our first one. I've got to do this part right now.
Okay, go ahead. Do your little part.
As we get our first Sunday roundtable debate, along with Michael Steele, Nick Sawalk, and Paul Carlson, I'll telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Nick.
I had one more question before we get off the State of the Union. The president is talking about going back into deficit spending. Mm-hmm. At the middle of a recession, we're going to start living above our means and charging up those credit cards. And he's talking about doubling the defense budget. Doubling the defense budget to fight three countries that can't even get off the dime. Why?
Well, it's not doubling the French to fight those three countries. It's to fight an entire network of terrorism that the administration and others have grown acutely aware of. The recession in and of itself seems to be at its beginning, its downward spiral in terms of an uptick in the economy. We'll see what happens in the next couple of quarters. I think that, you know, the president at this point is setting an agenda. He's setting a direction. It's going to cost money. Right now, the American people are saying we're willing to spend those dollars. Deficit and all the little boogaboo words that go with it don't seem to faze American people because, you know, security means a lot to them, and it has a lot of different fronts to it. So.
But you know what? You can't have it both ways. You can't have.
Sure, you can. This is America. Of course, you can.
Well, this is a criticism of the Republican Party that has gone from being, if it ever was, the party of fiscal responsibility, and really that has become a mantle that the Democrats hold dearly to, and that you can't cut taxes and have all of these spending priorities and not end up in a hole in mortgaging the future of this country and the future of the important programs, Social Security,
Medicaid, Medicare. You just can't have it both ways, and that's the most disturbing thing. I think that you can't do it all.
Okay.
You got to choose your priorities.
Can we go to Kevin and Bowie? Bowie has it all. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, sir. How are you this morning?
Fine. Go right ahead.
Okay, we had briefly a discussion on education centering on the possibility of the state taking over the local school boards.
Right.
Well, Nick pointed out that school board is elected by the PG County. It shouldn't be the state involved. It should be the local people. But what Nick did not carry on is that he's the chair of the Libertarian Party in Maryland. And the Libertarian Party calls for the total abolition of public schools as part of their platform. No schools for any children that the parents can't pay for it or charity doesn't provide. I think that would be a quick and informative discussion if the Republicans and the Democrats, I know Michael there, could say why they think we should stick with the Maryland State Constitution and have a public school system, and let Nick correct them where they're wrong.
sir, you are pointing out that our federal platform does in fact call for the end of public schools. And the reason it calls for an end to public schools is that public schools are a monopoly. And any time you have a monopoly and lack of competition in a market, you have for the students of the state.
Yeah, but isn't it true that the public schools also is a political football? I mean, you don't have this in Catholic schools. You don't have this in private schools.
As I was pointing out, that's the federal platform. The truth is, our candidate for governor in Maryland, Spear Lancaster, was just nominated this last week. In his platform for the state of Maryland, does not call for the abolition of public schools. What he calls for is taking a look at all of our educational options, taking a look at charter schools, taking a look at private schools, taking a look at vouchers, taking a look at improving public schools, and putting it all on the table and listening to what the people need and what the people, you know, trying to find better solutions to our problems.
Okay, our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. Absolutely free call in the Verizon Wireless System. So far, we've talked about the Met situation in Prince George's County and whether the school board should stay, go, or whatever. And now we're into Bush and the State of the Union address and how he's dressed that up, and we have issues to go. Pat in Alexandria. Let's talk to Pat. Hello, Pat.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
Always a pleasure.
Well, it is. What can I say? I'm listening to the gentleman talk about this, and I'm saying to myself as I listen to the State of the Union, as the parent of an active duty Marine, and as the widow of a Marine, defense is important, yes, but what bothers me about all of this is we're going to be cutting domestic programs that we also need. This bothers me. The other thing about the gentleman who says that Iraq hasn't done anything and Korea hasn't done anything, I think you better go back and look. Korea has been building up stockpiles, building up weapons, going for nuclear weapons. They're starving their own people. They still come across the border. These are not nice people. And as for Saddam Hussein, who hasn't done anything, get a grip. If anybody is supplying money to terrorists, if anybody wants to see things go his own way, if anybody who's building weapons of mass destruction that he will certainly give to these people who are definitely not Muslims, but total stuff, and smell the coffee, please. Get a real grip on the world today. It ain't like it was before.
Ma'am, I respect your points, and I appreciate the fact that you have a Marine who's active duty right now. And I'm looking at the fact that, you know, if they reinstitute the draft, most of my friends are going to have to go fight these wars.
Well, you know,
and
that
all
really
I'm
doesn't
saying
bother me because the draft was in and his father went. And quite frankly, I don't think the elimination of the draft did real good stuff for the young people in this country. They have not learned how to get along with each other. They have not learned responsibility. They have not learned how to participate in group stuff. And they also haven't learned one very simple thing. Freedom is not free. And if your friends are going, I'm really sorry.
Ma'am, are you saying that forcing them to go into the military against their will is going to teach them good things about freedom? You're forcing people into indentured servitude. Now, are you saying that forcing people into the military is going to teach them about freedom?
Okay, Paul, let me hear from Paul. Paul? Hold just a second, Pat. Let me hear from Paul.
No, I want to clarify what I said before in that it is no question that there are many enemies that we're just beginning to see and understand, quite frankly, and it's an international network. And my point about the John Wayne piece was that, lumping apples and oranges together
We may choose to deal with those different countries in a very different light, and I think that's been the president's policy up to date. And so I think the right thing is to would adopt a doctrine of, you know, speak softly, but carry a very big stick, and that's exactly what we've been doing, and I don't want to see us back away from that, but I think it does create problems with our coalition partners, and it's important that we build an international community, because it can't be just fought by us alone, and it shouldn't be.
Well, I think that,
thank you, Pat.
I think that we're going to build that international community, and we're going to keep those coalition. And I agree with you, Paul. We should we should speak very loudly and softly and carry a big stick. But I'd also want to speak loud every now and then. And if I've got apples and oranges, and I've got a great fruit basket, and I'm going to go through that fruit basket and take out what I need to take out when I need to take it out.
Do we go around smacking everyone else who looks like they have a stick?
If they've got a stick and
we're the only ones that are allowed to have a stick.
Well,
on the
no.
Block.
If you got a stick, and then get ready to get down, because we're going to have some fun with those sticks.
Well, while we have all these sticks, let me just simply say that this Paul Carlson, Democrat delegate of the Maryland House of Delegates, along with Nick Sawak, who is state chair of the Maryland Libertarian Party, and the state chair of the Maryland GOP, Michael Steele. They're here. That's the panel this week on the first Sunday roundtable debate, as we just discussed several issues. In the midst of it all, guys, we're getting phone calls in at 301-230-0980, #980 in the Verizon Wireless System. In the midst of it all, guys, regardless whether it's Metz in Prince George's County, state of address, union, countries, or whatever, there is one thing that's hovering over America. It's now become the albatross of the White House, and we're speaking of the word that Mr. Bush did not put in his State of the Union.
The E-word.
The E-word.
The E-word.
Why was that? Michael, why didn't he talk about Enron? And yet he talked about Enron. He talked about large corporations.
Right, exactly.
Yesterday.
He talked about the situation of Enron.
Okay.
What I find very fascinating about Enron is how it has been tied to campaign finance reform. It's been tied to low birth rates in America. It's been tied to the fact that the sun may come up a little funny tomorrow. And I mean, Enron is a very serious issue for a reason, and that is, a lot of people lost their life savings. You had businessmen who exercised poor business judgments, and they should pay the ultimate price for that. And I don't think there's all this political collusion that a lot of our folks would like to put out there, but that's just me. You know, I'm just
okay. Let's go to
state chairman.
Let's go. Is that Kevin? Should I go to Kevin in Bowie? Hello. Okay. Okay. Let me call Kevin. Kevin?
I'm here.
Yeah, go right ahead, Kevin.
Sorry, I lost the connection before.
Mm-hmm.
Back on the schools, Nick's correct. His current candidate for governor does believe in school vouchers and other programs, but that's also in the Libertarian Party platform as interim measures on the road to abolition of schools, and that's where that candidate stands.
Are you having trouble with the words federal platform, Kevin? Because I can say them again slowly.
I'm just tough enough to stand up and say what I mean.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Kevin. Let's go to Garvel in Lago. Good morning, Garvel. Is it Garvel?
Yes. This is Garvel. How you doing?
Hi, Garvel. How you doing? Go right ahead.
Oh, I'm hanging in there. Man, I wanted to make a comment on what Pat said. Lord, did she hit the nail on the head with me this morning, and I hope for a lot of other Americans. I do believe that a draft does need to be reinstituted because there are people out here that need that kind of discipline, that kind of the kids out here running amok. And she hit the nail on the head in my mind.
How old are you, Garvel?
I'm 43, and I sat in the Persian Gulf on the USS America when the hostages were taken in 1980.
I'm 22, Garvel, and I'm the one that would be eligible for the draft. So I would prefer that. You know, it's really, really annoying to me when you have people who are beyond draft age telling me that it would do me good to put me in somewhere with a gun when I may not even believe in the war that we're fighting. A lot of people didn't believe in Vietnam, and they got sent anyway. A lot of people came back with a couple less limbs.
Yeah, but Dick, you probably have someone who can get you out of that situation.
I do.
Sure.
You're right. I do have someone who can get me out of the draft. Only poor people from Prince George's County have to go.
Exactly. You come from privilege.
Paul,
come on.
Let me get Paul on the line here. Paul,
I was just saying, I think the most important thing is that we don't have have a need for a draft, that we get through our current crisis here, and we resolve some of these problems that we have throughout the world, and we have a world where we're not required to have a draft.
So let's talk to Robert in Sterling, Virginia. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Jerry. Good to be on again.
All right. Thank you.
Love your show.
I appreciate it.
I just have a question about taxes again, and a question and a follow-up. Does anybody there know what the percentage of taxes paid by the upper, say, 5 or 1%? I believe that I do. And second of all, what seems fair to each of the two individuals for that for those people to be paying?
I believe it's 36% of the total tax revenue base, but I wouldn't swear to it beyond a couple percentage points.
Okay, and does that seem fair to both of you, or should it go up, should it go down?
Well, as a libertarian, you don't want to ask me what seems fair. Why don't you ask the other two?
Okay. How does that seem to the other two?
Well, in my view, if you've got 1 to 2% of the population, and I'll accept your 36%, although I think it's a little bit higher.
Me too.
I think it's closer to 55 or 60%.
That's what I thought I'd heard.
You know, regardless of what level you're at, the fact this concept or mindset is because you have more, you need to pay more in taxes and have that wealth redistributed. As a Republican, I'm fond of that. I mean, I have no problem paying taxes for the essentials and the necessities. My concern, as I've experienced here in this great state of Maryland, is that the Democrats often don't know how to spend our money, which is why we have a tax cap in Prince George's County, which is why you have tax caps being the order of the day in a number of counties around the state. And it's one of those things that, you know, if you can spend my money well, you can have it. But if you don't, then let me keep control of it and do what I want with it.
Okay, Paul?
Yeah, I would just say it's very easy to sit on the sidelines and criticize those who have to make the tough decisions every day to govern and, you know, fund the priorities for the people in Maryland. In terms of an individual, you know, tax bracket for a certain percentage, look, we've got a lot of priorities out there, and quite frankly, we have a lot of problems in this state. Education is one of them. Certainly transportation is a big piece of that, and we have to figure out a way to fund those programs.
Right.
Paul, let me explain here. Paul says in Maryland, but that's the problem in the District of Columbia as well as
exactly.
Virginia.
Sure.
Transportation,
exactly.
Education.
But let me just make one thing clear, Delegate. With all due respect, as a taxpayer, I am not sitting on the sidelines. You're using my money. It's out of my pocket. I work for it. And while I may not be in Annapolis every day as you're making those great decisions, I am watching, and I do have some connection to my cash, and I want to have some responsible action taken on your part. So it's not being on the sidelines. I'm very much involved as a taxpayer because it's my money.
Thank you very much, Robert.
Can I have one more?
Sure, go right ahead, buddy.
My concern's a little bit different. My concern is what that kind of dependence of the majority on the very few does to the social fabric of this country.
Mm.
My concern is that eventually we'll get to the point where 1% of this country is going to support the rest of us, and I don't think that's very good for anybody.
We'll just send the rest of them off to join the draft.
Robert, thank you very much for your call. Okay, good, buddy. Let's turn to Sue. Sue's been waiting on the cell phone. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning.
Sue, can you straighten this whole
mess? Help us.
With
a 22-year-old.
Uh-oh.
You're a 22-year-old,
Dennis. Good morning, Sue.
Uh-huh. You know what? I'm age 64. I joined the reserves when I was 40, and I served for 20 years, went on active duty during Operation Desert Storm, and I'm extremely proud of that. I most sincerely believe that the draft should be instituted, men and women, and I think maybe it would help you out a little bit because you have a lot to learn. You're a 22-year-old that wants the easy side of the street, and they forget about how America needs people to get in there and also to get the kids off the street and to give them some description, some way of living.
Thank you for your service to our country, Sue. And I'd like to let you know that
sure.
The truth is that if we ever had a threat to our country, if we had a direct threat to our country, I would be the first to go up and sign up. And the truth is,
we just had a direct threat to our country.
The recruitment
two buildings
figures,
in the Pentagon.
I think there are about 4,000 people who are dead as a result of a direct threat to this country.
Well, you know, let me tell you.
Why don't you get down there and sign up?
Let me tell you, if you could show me that the people we were going to fight were the same people who blew them up, I would be all for it.
But if you're going to start calling people an axis of evil who have not stepped outside of their country's borders,
hey,
that's where I start to disagree with the policies of this country.
My other favorite comment is, if you love America, you'll take care of it. You don't take care of it by sitting at a desk or putting on a radio station and trying to tell people to get rid of the draft. It was probably the best thing that ever happened to the majority of our kids, because all of those that were drafted, the majority of those that were drafted and those that served, really love America, and they're still volunteering for a whole lot less money than what you're getting.
Okay. Sue, thank you very much for your call.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Have a good day, Sue.
Bye.
You got to love this lady, because I've talked to a police officer who's in off the beaten path, Nick, just for your information, and most of them say the best cops were those cops who were in the military police force, and they were trained. Wait a minute. They were given the fundamentals of police training. That's just one institution. You know, you can say the same thing about a lot of other businesses. I'm not saying pro-Ocono.
No. I love the military. Both of my mom and my stepdad were both in the military. I have a long history. My grandfather fought in Korea. Yeah. The military is great for people. The truth is, though, you have to join it voluntarily.
Okay.
You can't be forced into it.
Gentlemen, there's one word also that sings along with the E word in Ron, and that is recession, the R word, which we're told is rebounding all the time. Unemployment has dipped. Does that mean that there's a big rebounding?
No, I don't think it's a big rebounding. I think it's the beginning of the turning in this recession. And, you know, I think with the various stimulus packages that the president's put on the table and hopefully get signed, passed by the Senate, and maybe things will move on. Or then again, we may not need that. I mean, the economy may rebound on its own, which it appears to be doing so.
Very quickly. Well, you've also got the Federal Reserve has lowered interest rates at a record amount. We're down to 1.75%, I think, and that is a huge stimulus to our economy. So that's now playing out.
We just need to let it work.
Let's take Brian in Oxon Hill. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning. How's everybody?
Fine. Good. Very quickly.
Well, you've got a lot of topics I'm interested in, but I'm going to focus on the military real quick.
Uh-huh.
Because a couple reasons. Almost 20 years ago, President Reagan talked about a Star Wars space base, you know, because we had all these threats.
Right.
20 years later, that hasn't materialized. The current president is talking about spending gazillions of dollars against who has ICBMs, guys? Who has ICBMs?
We do, China does, and Russia does.
Okay. Now, if North Korea gets anywhere close, I think we might take an exception there. Right now, the best they can do is maybe throw one over Japan.
Well, let's face it. Those who attacked us used our own airplanes, own airspace, our own everything. So that goes to show you. I don't know whether Mr. Bush is talking about the countries that we need to go after. If that answers your question.
But when he's talking about his space base, protect us against incoming missiles launched from rogue nations, who has the ability to do it? Cuba.
Okay.
They don't have missiles. We just did that in 1962.
And I think,
thank you, Brian.
I think part of that, too, is the president may reevaluate this whole approach, and simply because the threat has changed. It's a different type of threat now that we're dealing with as opposed
favorite
to
favorite place
missiles.
Of mine, Burke, Virginia. Eric, very quickly.
Hi, let me see if I can make it quickly. The 22-year-old draft dodger there, there's never been a requirement for people to join voluntarily to go fight in war. And we've had drafts since the Civil War, actually, when the government needed requirements. Now, y'all are big government types, especially you, Larry. No, I don't mean that as an insult. I'm just kind of facing.
But Eric, just think they've had drafts beyond our country, even before America. People were drafted in military service in other countries.
Oh yeah, it's a long. Right.
Yeah, press gangs in Britain.
It's a long-standing thing when the government needs it.
That's right.
To go. But now that, and there's also never been really a requirement to personally convince individuals before we have a war that you need to go and serve.
Thank you very much, Eric. I gotta go.
Well, just a second. Well, you got one more thing. Now you're willing to soak up the benefits of a free society, but you're not willing to go when the government says we need you. That's the politics of capitalists.
Okay, thank you very much. Need. Jerome in Bethesda, you got the last word.
Hello?
Yeah, you got the last word very quickly. You have about 10 seconds.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree with the draft because, you know, if you go downtown and look at the monument and all the homeless and all that, and, I mean, the country forget about them. I mean, once you serve your purpose, they say, hey, that's it.
Okay,
you
thank you.
Thank you, Jerome.
Thank you.
May you and
point.
Me together.
Guys, we got, 30 seconds? We got about 30. Oh, got a minute. Okay.
Well, I got a whole minute.
Boy, Jerome, you can call us back again next week. And tell you, radio time is something here on Metro Talk. But anyway, let's go down the line and get a sort of a summary or a goodbye statement from everybody. Paul Carlson, thank you very much for joining us. Democrat delegate Carlson is with the Maryland House of Delegates. Paul, what do you think? Where are we going?
I wanted to go back to something that Michael had mentioned on the Enron thing, and that people are realizing that big business corporations, soft money is out there, and it's having a big influence on the kinds of policies that we implement in this country. And to me, that's a bigger indication that campaign finance reform is the right thing to do, and the Republicans need to move that piece of legislation.
Well, the Metro Talk Orchestra is in the background, so that means one thing. I got to get out of here.
Since Paul's brought that up, money flows to power like water, downhill.
Okay. Gotta go.
Okay. As a Republican in Maryland, I'm always with the underdog. Go New England.
Oh, boy.
I don't think I'll have money on that.
Thanks very much to our guests on the first Sunday Roundtable. I want to thank those who helped to put it together this morning, certainly. Public Affairs Administrator Producer is Laurie Klein. Technical Director is Chris King. Jason Fellow, our Public Affairs Assistant. Our simulcast operator is Kenny Franklin. Written and produced by yours truly, Jerry Phillips. Metro Talk is an old 100 Sports Talk 980 Public Affairs presentation from Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Till next time, my friend, enjoy Super Bowl Day as well as the Olympics. Much peace, much love. W-B-I-X.